You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try.
It's time to lean back and buckle in. This ain't your grandma's early learning podcast. Then again, your grandma probably didn't know what a podcast was. Hey, moms and dads, puppies and kittens, caregivers and advocates, it's time for Shaken Bones. Here's Dan and Amy.
Hi there. Welcome to the Shaken Bones podcast. I'm Dan Hodgins.
And I'm Amy Avila.
In this episode, we're going to talk about risky play. And we have Ben Dolby from Community Play School in Baltimore, Maryland with us. He's going to help us shake some bones. We might challenge your beliefs and maybe even stretch your comfort zones. And most importantly, we want to make you think. We don't expect agreement or disagreement, but what we do hope is to cause some shaking bones. Hi, Ben.
Hi.
Talk to people about your school a little bit, because they might not know where your school is and what the ages and that you work with. So talk a little bit about that.
Okay, sure. Community Play School is a small private preschool in Baltimore, Maryland. We serve families with children between the ages of 2 and 5. And I work the past few years I've worked in with our oldest group of kids in what we call the city room, which is a group of 14, 4 and 5 year olds, 5 days a week.
And both Amy and I have visited the school. I've had an opportunity to watch Ben in action, and he's perfect for this subject on risk because the children in his classroom are allowed to explore and develop and create, and a lot of that might involve what other people consider to be real risk. He's quite a remarkable teacher. So let's start with this whole concept of risk. Amy, because I know you allow your children in your program to take a risk too. Is that something you've always done, or was there at one point you did one thing and now you're doing something else? How did that evolve for you?
You know, I think we're always evolving, and I know that we definitely allow children to take a lot more risks now than we used to. And I'm not sure where, I can't really pinpoint where the turning point was, where we started to, you know, look at things a whole lot differently, because I think it has been just a gradual evolution for us. And, you know, when I see things on the internet or talk to other teachers or providers, or I visit different places, I look at things and I go, wow, you know, we could do this, or how could we do this? How could we allow more of this type of thing to happen? Because let me tell you, when I went to community play school for the first time and got to walk around, I was just like in awe of the wonderful things. And even though I wasn't there the first time when children were there, just to see the environment that was set up for the children. And a lot of the things that they do there are absolutely amazing. But in order for that to work for me in my setting, because I have children from birth, you know, to age 14, in order to make it work with the younger children, I really have to sit down and think about, okay, how is what this other person is doing going to work for me in my situation with the children that I serve?
Ben, you said that it was actually a school formation, wasn't it, in terms of the amount of risk that you were going to attempt to allow or encourage in your program? Was that a push for the whole school? How did you evolve into allowing and encouraging the children to do what you now have them do?
I mean, I think the way we would see it is supporting what they're interested in doing. And I think that evolution for us was definitely program-wide, and it was led by our director, Courtney Gardner, in a process of that, as Amy said, is certainly an ongoing evolution. It's a process that we're still engaged in, but a process of increasing the child-centeredness and child leadership of our program. So moving, for example, in my classroom inside, and maybe we can get into the whole inside versus outside part of this conversation, but moving my classroom inside away from a more traditional adult-organized, an adult-curated classroom with centers, with a science center and an art center and a, you know, manipulative center and a dress-up center, and instead creating a much more natural environment where the, where all those materials are available. It just, we just end up creating a different kind of physical space that supports more physical risk-taking.
Did you actually sit down together as staff and say, okay, I've observed, because for me, what changed my life is I became a better observer of children. Once I watched what they wanted and needed, then that caused me to change in my process, because 36 years ago when I worked with kids, I certainly, I know for a fact, wouldn't allow them, for whatever reason at that point, to do the things I now want children to do now. And I think it's because I observed carefully, recognizing, well, there seems to be a real need for climbing here, and I don't have enough climbing stuff, or at least climbing high stuff. So I'm going to start implementing that. So did you sit together as a staff and say, what do we need to do to encourage, support, and allow children to do these things?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, it was part of it, certainly a significant part of it was a process that the whole staff, that was a professional development process around building a set of core values for our program. How do we see children? How do we choose to see children as capable, as doing things for real reasons that need to be supported? So, for example, when a kid wants to climb, we're going to try to figure out a way to say yes to that child. And when a kid wants to jump, we're going to try to figure out a way to say yes to that child, because we're going to assume that that child wants to do those things for reasons that are real and important.
So perhaps the first step for risky adventures is to begin to, would you say, to begin to look up what children are capable of doing?
Yeah.
And then maybe putting the practices that reflect that?
Yeah. And this goes well beyond risk. It speaks to the curriculum in general, but I think certainly when kids want to be high, when kids want to climb, you know, both figuring out how to facilitate that process and say yes to those desires, and also figure out how to do that in a way that's going to be safe.
So once we decide that this is what we want to do, what are some of the things, Amy, that you would view, or maybe the other, not you, but what others might view is risky play that you allow, encourage, and support children to do in your program? Because you have that, as you said, that wide range of age groups.
You know, I think a lot of the things that we're talking about in terms of risky play aren't really risky. People just perceive them to be that way. And so it's getting beyond the perception. But, you know, you're asking for specific things. You know, we allow the children to jump off of, it was the radiator cover, and now instead of the radiator cover, we've got a piece of a loft there that they jump off of. The wrestling. The running inside, when they want to hit or roughhouse, there are plenty of pool noodles or stuffed socks or different things that they can use in order to have, you know, some of the more bigger body and gross motor type of things inside as well as outside.
How about you, Ben? When I was there, I'm 6 foot tall, and I remember children being higher than 6 foot tall in your program, especially at one point you had a, it wasn't a loft, it was something makeshift that the children put together at one wall at the end. So what kinds of things do you have that would allow children to take those risks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it really, to go back to the evolution of the program and finding a, you know, I think that all of us as early childhood educators need to find a place that we're comfortable connecting with this, where that we're comfortable kind of attaching into this project. And that could be something as simple as putting a mattress on the floor. You know, it doesn't have to be building some elaborate sort of climbing structure and getting 8 feet off the ground. And I think, like, for younger kids, in my experience, what they want, one of the ways that we describe it sometimes is to say that we're creating the illusion of risk. You know, a 2x4 on the ground, what, you know, balancing across that is not actually risky, but it can feel that way, and it can feel powerful to accomplish that. It can feel scary to fall off of it. You know, so those kinds of things can be really important and valuable experiences for young children. I think as children get older, more into the age group that I have been working with, that kind of illusion of risk gives way to things that are more actually risky.
Yeah, I love it when children will walk across a little plank and yell, you know, be careful, the alligators are below, and, you know, that statement alone, the illusion is that there are alligators who are about to eat you up if you fall into the pretend ocean or whatever. Amy, I think you said this really well, is the fact that frequently they're not really that risky in terms of the process. It's just what the children have created, that the illusion is there that makes it be viewed as a risk-taking process. Why do you think that children need, is there a benefit to risk-taking?
I think they're just, you know, when children have to take a risk, you know, later on in life when they have to learn how to read or they need to speak in front of other people or do different things, we all have different levels where we have to jump outside of our comfort zone and take some sort of risk. So children, you know, also need these experiences with risk. And as their bodies are developing, it's teaching them to trust themselves and to, you know, to test themselves and to stretch themselves beyond where they're at now in order to continue to grow and to learn.
Yeah. And I would say there's, I agree with that, Amy, and I think also there's just some intrinsic value to things like seeing a room from a different point of view, from, you know, from up high, you know, seeing your playground or your outdoor space from upside down and spinning. You know, I think those are just valuable experiences.
Is there a difference between the risk-taking adventures that children have indoors versus outdoors? Is there a difference?
I'm not sure there's a difference for the children. Maybe there is. What I get hung up on is I think that it's easier for adults to allow those kinds of experiences to happen outside than it is for us to allow them to happen inside. And when kids' outside space time is limited, that limits the time that they have available to engage in risky activity.
How about tree climbing, Amy? Is there any tree climbing in your, do you have trees that children can climb?
I don't have trees that children can climb. I covet the neighbor's yard because I want their trees so badly. And maybe someday we will be in a position. Actually, I was talking to our neighbor the other day. She said that she may be thinking about selling within the next 3 years. So, you know, that may be something down the line. And so we don't have trees for the children to climb. However, we did make sure to add some, you know, different things for children to be able to climb with a structure outside that isn't actually a tree.
So they can get higher than their bodies.
Yes.
Yeah. How about you, Ben? Do you have trees in your outdoor space?
We do now, yeah. We have one great climbing tree that's a U, or I guess it's a U, that's all branchy at the bottom. That's really, really fun. And then we have a hive climber inside our enclosed playground that we built with staff and families built together.
What, you know, at one point when I was young, which is a long time ago, but, you know, tree climbing was part of the natural everyday life experience. It's just what you did, not only to pick an apple or whatever, but also, like you had said, Ben, earlier, sometimes you see the world in a different perspective when you're looking down at it, etc. Now there's that trend to not want children to climb very high because they could break their arm or fall down and cause some bodily damage. So there's actually that preventing kids from really getting very high at all. Where did this come from? Why did we, because the amount of accidents that occur from falling at a tree is very slim, but where do you think this came from? Why do we think that it's so difficult for adults to allow children to do those kinds of activities? Any opinion to that?
I think kids are still doing it. I think it's hard for parents to watch their kids do dangerous things. It's hard for me to watch my own kids do dangerous things. But when I'm not around, I think they're still doing that stuff. I think they're finding a way.
Yeah, I believe you're right. But we do have an attitude sometimes where if we prevent children from being hurt, they'll be more safety-minded, and that's not what we're finding. We're actually finding that children who are allowed to take risks actually become better at safety in terms of that process. Have you found that to be true in your experiences, Amy?
Definitely. I mean, children who are given free rein to roam, and as they're learning to walk and they're able to walk on different level surfaces, you know, are so much safer and have less, most of the time, unless there's something going on with their balance or their development, have less falls and less things happening than the children who are, you know, have been kept or not allowed to experience the stairs or the different levels. Because, you know, as they're growing and developing, they're learning to trust their bodies and what their bodies can do. So as they're taking these small risks at a time, their bodies are developing so that they're able to take bigger and bigger risks. And then the children who are kept from doing that, you know, maybe they've been held a lot more, or they're put in chairs, or, you know, these little activity things. And, you know, I'm thinking mostly infant toddlers right now, because we have had some children come to us from other places who, you know, kind of get moved from different pieces of equipment to different pieces of equipment. They don't have the same steadiness in their walk. They're not, you know, they get hurt a lot more for things that other children their age are not, they're not falling because they've had that experience in taking the smaller risks before the bigger risks come along.
This has been Shaking Bones. Dan and Amy will be back next week for more Bone Rattling. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. And if you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.